You should have an outline. 1 Peter chapter 5, the great enemy. The various key topics or key thought or a key thought, let's put it that way, in each of the chapters. I think we put at the beginning of your outline. The great salvation in chapter 1, verses shown there. Great example, the example that Jesus left for us. The great responsibility that we have as a Christian to be able to give a reason for the answer that within us lies. And then chapter 4, the great name. I see you left that one out. Chapter 4, the great enemy. That computer does that. Not really, I did that. That should be the great name. I'm not ashamed of, to suffer as a Christian, for us not be ashamed. In 1 Peter 4, verse 16, if any man suffers a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. In the last chapter, chapter 5, 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9, write that in your memory or write that down on a piece of paper if you have a memory like I do. 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9, the great enemy Satan. So we have some of the key thoughts of 1 Peter. As Peter speaks to people, primarily people that were taught by the Apostle Paul, likely on his missionary journeys. Timothy was on along with him part of the time. Paul Barnabas was with him, and Silas was with him on one of the journeys that took him back to some of these places. But Peter is writing, and of course he would appeal to the Jewish audience at those various churches, as Paul was primarily the missionary to the Gentiles, although he taught both. So Peter, I don't know whether it's much later than Paul had gone on his journeys, but I take it that it would be sometime later. And some lessons that he brings out in that chapter, it's number 2 on your outline, purpose of our study. Verses 1 through 4, not the 14 verses, and three basic points. Study the responsibility of church leaders as set forth here in these four verses in this chapter. And encourage one another toward humility. Humility to those who are older. Humility to each other, no matter what age. And then the third point, he talks about the assurance that we have in God that he provides by his amazing grace that we just sing about in that great song that Jerry led us in. The outline would be those three basic points. If the responsibility of elders is first, let's read the first four verses. The elders of which among you I exhort, who am also an elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of ready mind, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, you shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. I've got a little bit, I mentioned someone, I have a little bit more of an outline than you do, and someone suggested that they'd rather I go by this outline I handed you because it's shorter. But because of a lack of words to fill in between, I will use mine and try not to go as long as this morning. Might put somebody to sleep. Although when you show interest, which I appreciate this morning, attention, you know, I lose track of time, so you might want to be disruptive next time a little bit, right? But I appreciate that. But sometimes the time goes by without you knowing that you have reached the point of endurance for many folks as far as our attention. Now, Paul talks about elders, and I think the key point that he's making there initially is that he was an elder. And he's the only one who writes on the subject. Paul writes on the subject in Titus chapter 1 and 1 Timothy 3, but Paul wasn't an elder. But Peter had gone through these things. Of course, Paul had been directed by the Spirit of God, so he was speaking. He was speaking those things that had to do with elders, and he had appointed, on his first missionary journey, we came back through some of the various, towns where the churches were established. He had the churches appoint elders. In fact, he was involved in that appointing. He sent, Titus to Crete to appoint elders on that island. So that was one of the key purposes in the first chapter of Titus. Galatians 2 and 9, when Paul writes to the church there, he talks about his training, where he got what he knew about Jesus, and he said, I received it from revelation, by revelation from Jesus Christ, and not from those in the Jerusalem church. And especially he emphasized Peter, James, and John, who seemed to be, quote, pillars of the church. And it's thought that at least James and Peter were elders there in the church at Jerusalem. They would need leadership. I mean, there were servants appointed in Acts chapter 6 to look after those Grecian widows. And you know, with all the apostles had to do, that sooner or later, if they had men that were qualified, elders would be appointed there. So he was an elder and likely in the church of Jerusalem. That's what I surmise. I don't know whether we know that for sure, but he did not refer to himself as an apostle at this point. He had done that early on in the first chapter. In verse 1, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. And then in chapter 2, verse 1, and he and Paul both would do that right away, writing to churches or to individuals usually. But here he's not emphasizing his authority as an apostle. He's talking about his experience as an elder. He wants his experience as an elder to be the driving force, I think, because he's speaking to elders. He lets them know right away, too, that he was a witness of the sufferings of Christ. That he was, just as John said in 1 John 1, Peter was there. And Peter knew Christ. He knew him firsthand. He was witness to everything that went on. He wasn't really extremely close by, but he was not as far off probably as some of the other apostles during that final week of Jesus' life. He says he was a partaker of the glory of Christ. He says all Christians share in this glory. If we look at 1 Peter 1 verse 11, it talks about Jesus having the glory that followed his suffering. I think he's doing that by way of encouraging, because that's one of the basic point of 1 and 2 Peter. He's talking to people that are suffering at that time and will continue to be persecuted and suffer. And so he's giving them encouragement and faith of that. 1 Peter 1:11, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ, which was in them, did signify, when it testified beforehand of the sufferings of Christ and the glory that should follow. So though Christ suffered, we know that glory followed, and we read about that in Luke 24:26, John 17, and verse 5. Some exhortations to these elders in verses 2 through 4. Notice that he says, feed the flock. That word, well, let's go back to the word elder used in the first verse. That's one word used to indicate the office of an elder, which is referred to in Titus 1 and 1 Timothy 3. But that comes from a Greek word, I think I show on there on your outline, to presbyteros. And the reason I put those words down is because sometimes those words are translated elder and overseer or shepherd, as they are in our these verses here, and sometimes they're translated something else. So we want to go a little bit more detail in that. But to these elders, he said, tend the flock. Now that's exactly what Paul told the elders in Ephesus. He says, feed the flock which they were overseers for there in Ephesus. He told them this in Acts chapter 20, verses 28 through 31. And I'd like to read that this time. Acts chapter 20. 28 through 31. Paul had a really heart-to-heart discussion with these men. A lot of problems were going to develop in the church of Ephesus, and we can see the results of those problems when we get over to the book of Revelation, and the church of Ephesus is talked about and indicates there that they had left their first love. But he says, take heed therefore unto yourselves, that's talking to the elders, and to all the flock. And really, we know we're talking to elders. Back in verse 17, he says, from leaders he sent to Ephesus and called the elders of the church. And then he tells them, this is what you need to do. This is my warning to you. This is my alert to you. Take heed therefore unto yourselves. So that's the first thing he tells them, you've always got to keep yourself straight. We talk about preaching the gospel, teaching the gospel, leading others to Christ. But in order to do that, you have to be right first yourself in order to do that. Because people are going to see the hypocrisy if we go out and try to teach somebody else something that we're not doing or something that we're not being. So take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock. Well, flock, that's a sheep. That's a sheep. That would be the church. Over the which the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost, hath made you overseers. Now that word overseer, is another word sometimes used for elder. And the word overseer is also sometimes, translated bishop. Let's go ahead and read the rest of this and we'll look at that some. I've got some other notes here on that. Take heed to the flock, to yourself, and all the flock which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to feed or tend the church, feed the flock, it says in 1 Peter 5 and 2, and he says here, feed the church. That word is, and I put it on your notes, is P-O-I-M-E-N, shepherd or pastor. So he could have said here, shepherd the flock, feed the flock, tend the flock, or he could have said, pastor the flock. Now, what else is he telling these elders? Feed the church of God, which he hath purchased with his own blood. For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. This is why he's warning them. And also of your own self. See, even among the elders, the false teachers are not picky as to who they pick on. And elders are a preacher, a teacher, a deacon, a song leader, a regular member. False teachers don't care. Satan doesn't care. In fact, if he can get a hold of the elders and the preachers and the teachers, he can run havoc through the church, and the sheep would be scattered everywhere. You know this, that there'll be grievous wolves entering among you, not sparing the flock. That's the wolves as compared to sheep, and they don't get along very well. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. Therefore, watch. A word used that back at that time and earlier in the history of the Jews especially, they had these watchtowers, and they would know that on the on the walls of the buildings where they look out in the distance, and that was a guard. That was a defense. He said, watch and remember, don't forget, that by the space of 3 years, he'd been at Ephesus 3 years, thereabout, I ceased not to warn everyone night and day with tears. Paul was really sincere with these men, and he knew what was coming down the pike, and he warned them about it. Now, responsibility in your outline, responsibilities lie in the meaning of various terms referring to the leaders of the church. The elders, a lot of times when the word elder is used in the Bible, if two ages have been compared, it means the one who's older. That makes sense. And Luke 15:25 talks about the elder brother of the prodigal son. This would indicate, it would be rather obvious to us, that this man was older than that other son. But the word elder, the Greek word behind that word elder, is the same word that's used for elder here in chapter 5. So the context of a passage, a lot of times is essential in determining what a particular word means. Approximately 17 times in the New Testament, it's used of those who are shepherds or overseers or caretakers of the house of God. The term probably was taken from a term the word elder that was used to refer to the rulers in the Sanhedrin, those who were leaders under the Jewish law. But their function is quite different, and that's set out in the qualifications, Titus 1, 1 Timothy 3. And two other terms which mean the same as elder in the New Testament. Let's look at Acts 20, verse 17. We just had it, and I marked it. Acts 20, verse 17. And from Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called the elders of the church. Now the word elder there is presbyteros, that particular Greek word. If it wasn't otherwise known, it could be just the older people of the church. But we know that there was an office, so when we look at other verses, let's look at verse 20, in chapter 20, verse 28, where it says, take heed, therefore, unto yourself and to all the flock over which the Holy Spirit made you overseers. And that word overseers is a different Greek word from which we get the word bishop. Word bishop now is used by many church organizations. It's usually a higher, thought of as a higher rank within the church leadership. In fact, it is thought that that's the way when the church got off the right path, apostasy, not too many centuries after the first century, that there would be an individual who would be a head elder over maybe more than one church and would later grow into a bishop. I think there's a bishops and cardinals are used by the Catholic churches to this day, kind of in a setup like this, with the Pope at the top, and then the cardinals, and then the bishops. And that's exactly the type of hierarchy that the Roman Empire had, with the king, with the Caesar at the top, and then with his lieutenants and on down the line, to govern on the Roman Empire. But look in Titus 1, 5, and Titus, is over in this other direction, James. Titus hides a little bit, and I found it right away. After 1st and 2nd Timothy, which is after 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. Titus 1, 5. I try not to bounce around so much the rest of our time, but I wanted to point out these things. Verse 5, so for this cause, this is Paul talking to Titus, left I thee in Crete that thou should set in order the things that are wanting. Leadership had not been appointed. and ordain elders in every city as I have appointed thee. Okay? Elders in every city. Now look at verse 7. For a bishop must be blameless. Where in the world did he get the bishop? I thought he was going to talk about elders. Well, he is. It's just another word used for that same office. The word bishop. For a bishop. So when we get the qualification for elders from the book of Titus, chapter 1, we got to give the qualifications for bishop. Because it doesn't say qualifications for elders. But they're the same, though. They're the same. The word bishop is just from the from a different Greek word that means overseer. It's a function, a title indicating a function. The word elder suggesting someone older. You don't want somebody young in the faith or young in age being an elder. Seems like a lot of places in churches we get a lot more younger and younger people with less and less experience at being Christians. Now, they may or may not be qualified. I can't judge at that. But also, just being old doesn't make you a good elder either, unless you have the qualifications. So, but note that the word bishop means is another word for elder. Bishop or overseer, another word for elder as proved by Titus 1:5 and word 7. Now, word shepherd is a word, the word poimain or tend or feed or shepherd or pastor is used 16 times. 16 times this word poimen in the Greek. Now, when somebody went to translate from the Greek to the English, they had to look at that word. That's what they were looking at. Now, they didn't have it spelled out in English, but that would be the word he was looking at. And every time, except one time, they rendered that word shepherd. Shepherd. Guess what they rendered it the other time? They rendered it pastor. P-A-S-T-O-R. I think if you look in the New Testament, and especially in the King James, I don't know what the other translation do that any differently, but the word pastor appears only one time in the New Testament. Now, it appears in the book of Jeremiah three different times referring to a shepherd because it talks about the pastors who are over the people, the leaders over the people. Let's look in Ephesians 4 and verse 11 because, you see, there's some confusion among various religious groups as to the use of that word pastor. But see, it's the same word. The word pastor is the same word as we picked up a while ago, the word shepherd, when it tells the elders to feed or shepherd the flock or tend the flock. That's the work of a shepherd. And that's what is rendered pastor, that particular Greek word suggesting that particular function mistranslated pastor, or the only time it's translated pastor is in Ephesians 4:11, where it says he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers. So that word pastor there means shepherd. And the word shepherd in the Bible, the word tend and the word feed refers to elders. So when we talk about that then, we find that these words are interchangeable, that the word elder, bishop, and pastor are all referring to the same person. That's why I don't call myself, and I don't call myself anything but Jim. My sister called me Jimmy. I'll answer to that. And if you call me for supper, I'll answer to anything. Call me whatever. But bishop, elder, bishop, pastor all refer to the same person. The word pastor and the word bishop and the word elder, the little shades of difference in their meanings suggest difference in the function of the office of elder or bishop or pastor. And it's not the preacher. It's not the preacher. Although in many congregations, Even though one denomination, especially that they have elders and they have deacons, deacons seem to be most powerful until the quote pastor gets hold of the money strings of the church, the purse strings of the church. We noticed that out at Two Rivers Church out on at Opryland, and they had some difficulties with that because. Here's a man that is, quote, the pastor. And God wanted several individuals, at least two or more, being the leaders of the church. And I've seen situations where, been in one situation where one man had to have his way. And basically he was the leader of that church. And that's not good. Sometimes that can cause lots of problems. It didn't ultimately cause any problems there. But anyway, going back to 1 Peter 5, God's flock, verse 2, speaks of God's flock, take the oversight thereof, not by, I told them, feed the flock of God and taking the oversight thereof. And notice it uses three couplets there in talking about these elders, not by constraint, so don't take the oversight by constraint, but willingly. In other words, there should be a desire there to be an elder. Notice that it starts out with a negative, but ends up with a positive. Not by constraint, but willingly. Not for money or base gain, but of a ready mind. That also would include or suggest desire, neither is being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. Folks like to see how things need to be done. You have somebody explain something to you, and before you know it, you say, show me. Show me. And when you show me, I'm more apt to remember it. When you use a bunch of words, especially as I get older, I told this guy at the computer store, I said, fella, you lost me at about the third word. I said, don't tell me anything about that computer. I said, I know how to turn it on, I know how to turn it off. And if there's anything more to be done than that, then I'm going to have to come back here to you for you to do it. Or you to talk to my son who can understand it beyond the first word, because my mind and the word computer don't go together. My mind and anything may not go together, but that's another discussion. So anyway, we're those three couplets they're talking about. It says, rather than ruling with an iron hand, an elder is supposed to primarily lead by his example, leading an everyday life that provides a life of imitation by the members of the church. And that's why I've seen also where a man that was older, in fact he was kin to me, but he wasn't qualified to be an elder, and yet he was appointed. Well, that's not good for that man. I've been a Christian 2 or 3 years, had a whole lot of children, and had a whole lot of gray hair, and he would do anything for you, but he didn't know the Bible, and he didn't have enough experience in dealing with the questions that could come up with the church. Let's look at verses 5 through 9. Likewise, you younger, submit yourself to the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. So Peter calls the brethren here in verse 5 and then in verse 6 to humility. Humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Philippians 2:3 says, in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than himself. Why does Peter say be humble here? Well, verse 5 he says, be subject one another, be clothed in humility, for God resists the proud. If I go around with a lot of pride in everything, I mean, I need to take pride in what I do and how I do something, but not pride in myself. God's going to resist that person. He's going to give grace to the humble, favor Humble yourselves, therefore, verse 6, under mighty hand of God. Why? That he may exalt you in due time. Where else are we going to go? We'll put ourselves right out there on top. Where's God going to put us? God will exalt us in due time. In various relationships, he said to the younger, submit to the older. But then, lest we, the rest of us think that, you know, once we're old, everybody has to submit to us. That doesn't work. We have to submit ourselves to one another. Just like Ephesians 5 talks about the husband-wife relationship. Wife's supposed to submit to the husband, and we don't read any. Husbands don't like to read any farther than that. But you submit to one another, too. Casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. A lot of times we don't do that, do we? We let that thing that's bugging us and bothering us stay with us. The fact that it's bothering us means we haven't resolved it by ourselves. And so we need to use God. Dump our cares and move on. Verse 8 says, be sober. Be sober. Be of sound mind. Be vigilant. Be watchful. Alert. Why? Because that we have a real adversary out there. Adversary, what does that mean? We have an enemy. It's an opponent in a law case. You go into law against somebody and your adversary is the one that's your opponent in that lawsuit. Christ is our friend. We say, what a friend we have in Jesus. And then he says, one other thing concerning this, he says, you know, you need to resist the devil rather than to give in. Resist the devil, and there's a reward for that, isn't it? He'll flee from you. What happened in the wilderness when Jesus was tempted and he responded three times to Satan, it is written, and what did it say? He left him. Left him for a season. So resist the devil and he'll flee from you. I have the example of Jesus in Matthew chapter 4. Resist by a steadfast or rock-like faith. And he goes on to say, verse 9 says, resist steadfast in faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. In other words, don't think that there aren't other people going through the same things that we're going through. But says then in verse 10, another point, concluding assurance and then some personal greetings from Peter. But the God of all grace, who hath called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that you had suffered a while. Does that give you any good news? After you suffered a while. So the suffering is going to be temporary. It may not seem temporary. But he says, suffer for a while. After you have suffered for a while, make you perfect. That is, God will make you perfect. The God of all grace will perfect you. Have you go on to maturity. Establish you or fix position to support us and to settle us. It says, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. Then he talks about praising God there in verse 11, by saying to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. And then 12 through 14, some personal matters. This had been written, could have been written by Silas. Sometimes Paul did that. He says, by Silvanus, a faithful brother unto you, whether he means he did the writing. He says, I suppose I've written briefly. Silvanus or Silas may have been likely the messenger. He passes along some greetings. That's by Silvanus, a faithful brother unto you, as I suppose I've written briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God wherein you stand. The church that is in Babylon. He may have been in Babylon for a while, too. Elected together with you, salute you, and so does Marcus, my son. Some have speculated Babylon to be Rome. Some have also called Peter the first pope, but we know he was married, and those who call him the first pope will never admit that he ever was married. That just wouldn't quite fit. And they read Rome there instead of Babylon. But I'm told by those who know of the history of that period that Babylon was not totally destroyed and still existed at that time, and that there was a group of Christians down there that were Jews that were meeting. And then he mentions John Mark. We don't know whether the same John Mark, but there was a John Mark mentioned in Acts chapter 12. You know, Peter was put in prison, an angel came and unlocked the doors and let him out, and he went to this house, and John Mark's family was there, I believe it mentions. And also John Mark, this may be the John Mark that Paul said to Barnabas, "No, I'm not going to take him on the second missionary journey." He went with us on first, and he kind of skedaddled after we went a little while. So we don't know that. But we learn quite a bit as we read the book of 1 Peter that can help us in times of trials and times of suffering. And at least sometimes just knowing, I know as far as grief over the loss of a loved one, member of the family or a real close loved one, there are different aspects, different phases that you go through. And sometimes that happens in suffering. There are different things we go through, and sometimes it's good to know that somebody else has gone through it. It's good to know that we can expect it. I mean, if it's going to be there, I like to be expecting it rather than it jump on me as I go around a corner somewhere, you know. Whoop, there it is. Boy, I didn't expect that. Well, expect it. There will be suffering. Our health is not always going to be as good as it is today. We may be griping and complaining about the way it is today, but it's not always going to be as good as it is today. We need to be thankful for that, and we need to be thankful that others have gone the way of suffering and trials, and sometimes that suffering, I heard a guy speaking about it today, the sufferings and trials, according to the book of James chapter 1, brings patience, and that's what we need a lot of. It brings a little bit of more of empathy and understanding of someone else who's going through some suffering or trials in their life. I think everyone here is a Christian tonight, so invitation is extended to any who are Christians who desire the prayers of the church on your behalf for whatever reason, or if you wish to rededicate your life to Christ, whatever you need. Would you come as we stand as we sing, song selected?